Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
The TalkSport Daily Podcast is proud to be in partnership with Enterprise Rent-A-Car. Whether your business needs cars, vans, or larger commercial vehicles, you can rent from the best lineup in the UK with Enterprise. And with flexible long-term rental, you can get vehicles for as long as you need them, from minutes to months. Whatever the mission, Enterprise's mobility experts can build a bespoke solution to suit your business needs. Visit enterprise.co.uk/business to find out more.
And it's Golden Horn and Frankie Dettori from Flintshire in second place. Trevor's on the outside in third, trying to close. Golden Horn, though, is answering every call from Frankie, and it's Golden Horn who's going to win the Arc.
Charismatic, happy, bonkers.
And it's seven for Frankie. Fujiyama Cliff holds on.
And it's a Frankie win on the fourth day of Royal Ascot.
He adds colour, energy, passion.
Effervescent, brilliant, unique.
The best that we've ever seen.
Racing royalty, Enable and Frankie Dettori.
He's run him into the ground. It's four out of four. Dettori on fire.
That's Frankie time.
Frankie Dettori is a sporting superstar with a larger-than-life personality. Ask someone from the general public to name you a jockey, and the answer is the same. Frankie. Dettori transcends his sport, and at the age of 49, having achieved almost everything possible in a sparkling career, he's showing no signs of a farewell flying dismount. In fact, the iconic Italian is as good as ever. Winning a record 19 Group 1 races this year, as well as 7 winners at Royal Ascot, earning him the top jockey title at Britain's biggest meeting. He was also named the world's best jockey for a second year running, becoming the first to win the award back-to-back. But it hasn't always come easy for Frankie Dettori, and over the next hour we'll look back at the highs and lows of his career and life so far. We'll hear from some of the biggest names in horse racing.
There is a bit of madness in Frankie, but I think in every genius that competes at a level of sport, there's something inside them all that makes them different.
We'll find out how his career could have taken a very different path.
Things were really going against Frankie Dettori. There was a lack of confidence in him. He probably lacked confidence in himself.
We'll reveal how he cheated death.
The only way out was through the front, which we couldn't get to the front because it was on fire. Frankie couldn't move. The flames would have been hitting him.
And we speak to the man himself about being racing's brightest star.
When you ride a favourite at Royal Ascot and it's 40,000 people shouting your name, I mean, you can't get any better than that.
I'm Rupert Bell, and this is Frankie. Ever since I've worked in racing from the early 90s, Frankie Dettori has been a dominant presence in the sport, with an ability to grab the headlines, good and bad. And his current success, approaching the age of 50, has left me surprised and delighted in equal measures. But how did Frankie become the face of racing? The story began in 1984, when a 14-year-old left his native Italy and arrived in Newmarket.
The deal was to spend 6 months in England and 6 months in France as working experience before I could start racing at 16, or 15 and a half in my case in Italy. My English was very minimal. And I had a sign put on my chest with my name on it in case I got lost. I was shoved in the easy jet and sent to Luton Airport, where somebody picked me up and took me to the stables. The first 3 months were difficult. You know, obviously I was Italian, I was a bit bullied a bit. But then, I started to grasp a few words and I started to make some friends. And when the time was up for me to leave, actually Luca Comani, the guy I used to work for, he asked my dad if I could stay because he saw a bit of potential in me. And I'll be honest with you, I was quite pleased to stay because at that moment, I was 15. I had friends. You know, hormones were kicking in. I was chasing the girls, and I loved the Newmarket camaraderie.
The man taking him under his wing was top trainer and fellow Italian Luca Comani, who I spoke to at the Newmarket sales.
He was very, very wild because his parents had split up, and he used to live with his grandmother, and so he got no discipline whatsoever, and he did whatever he wanted to. And so when he came here, he had a bit of a shock because at racing yard operates on discipline. Everybody has to pull their weight and do the things they're supposed to do. So that was a bit of a shock for him.
Luca's daughter Francesca, and now ITV presenter, had her own unique first impressions.
You always knew when Frankie was around because he was such a kind of large presence, even at that age. And he always had a huge confidence about him. And for some reason, I always have this memory of him coming into the house and going straight to the kitchen and grabbing a ball of mozzarella and just eating it straight out of the packet. Now you have these random memories. Didn't think it was the healthiest thing for a jockey to be doing. But you always knew when he was around. You always knew when he was in riding gallops. And he always got on so well with all the lads and the staff in the yard.
Experienced stable jockey Ray Cochrane, a man who was later to become his close friend and agent, already had him on his radar.
He had a nice helmet, nice jumpers, nice shiny boots, but the horse was always covered in straw marks. Had straw in his tail, straw in his mane. Tack wasn't put on that well. But the jockey always looked quite nice. But doing his horse, getting it out, wasn't very good. But he always looked like he had a bit of talent about him and looked like he had a bit of sophistication about him. I don't know why, 14 and a half.
Also at the stable was another young, aspiring jockey, Jason Weaver.
We were young and wild, and of course we went off the rails, and we were late on numerous occasions, and Luca didn't take very well to that at all. And so we were severely reprimanded, we were banned from riding, we were put on trotters around the hill when the horses were working. Yes, but we had a slap on the legs for what we did wrong.
Yeah, I mean, that was a nightmare, I'll be honest with you. An absolute nightmare. I was wild. I was Italian, I had a point to prove, and yeah, I wasn't easy manageable. It was quite embarrassing when you look back to things I used to do.
On one occasion, we had a horse that he'd been riding work. It was a notorious Morning Glory, and Frankie had been riding him work, and he told all and sundry that it was a certainty he would win, and there was no, and everybody should lump on. And then the horse naturally got beaten because he was only a Morning Glory, and Frankie was heard by the head lad to come round at evening stables and go round everybody saying the old man can't train Ivy up a wall. The head lad reported that to me when I went round, so I picked Frankie up and put him against the wall, and I said, look, Frankie, for as long as you work for me, I'm the greatest trainer there is on earth, and that's all you have to think and say about. And he went away very sheepishly, and I think that taught him a lesson that, you know, you have to be loyal to the person who you work for.
No question, early life lessons learnt for Frankie, but it certainly didn't dent his self-belief.
I started riding at 16, and obviously, as your kid, you start in apprentice races, and I was winning most of them, and I realised that, wow, you know, I think I'm all right. Yeah, because you compare yourself to other children, because when you're 16, you're still a child, really. You know? And, you know, and I stood out, and I knew then, you know, I might be okay at this.
He wanted to be successful. He was a young man and he was very talented, but he wanted to be successful. He wanted to ride winners. Well, I knew this anyway because we used to chat a lot, and he travelled about with me quite a lot, so sort of I was sort of mentoring him anyway. Well, not that I knew it, but he would ask a lot of questions, and you know, and hopefully I give him the right answers and give him the right help. But he was always very talented, and you knew he was going to be very good.
ITV racing presenters Ed Chamberlain and Francesca Comani, as well as legendary jump jockey AP McCoy, believe nature, as well as nurture, had a big role to play.
His mum was a gymnast, for starters. So she explains his incredible dismount. But he's a very talented sportsman and athlete.
But he's pretty well bred for the job, if you think about it. His father was a very, very good jockey himself. He rode for my grandfather initially. And his mother is a circus performer, so incredibly agile, very athletic.
You know, he's probably as perfect a shape as you could ever imagine to make a flat jockey. I'd say he's triple jointed or double jointed. He's whatever. I know he does fly in dismounts, definitely does him better than I do.
Ray Cochrane again.
He always knew that he had was going to have a lot of talent. He had a lot of talent when he first arrived. We rode work together quite a lot, and I thought to myself, well, you know, time will come when I'll have to be moving somewhere else.
But with success at his fingertips, a young Frankie had his first setback.
One winter, I kept hearing press people rang me up and said, is it true that Frankie signed up to go to Hong Kong? And I said, no, I know nothing about it. And after the first or second call, I dismissed it. And then when I had the third or fourth call, I started thinking, there's something going on here. So I tried to track him down. In those days, we didn't have mobile telephones, so it was very difficult. He was abroad somewhere, I didn't know where. And so I couldn't track him down. And then he came back in February from wherever he'd been and came into my office, and he said, I've decided I'm going to ride in Hong Kong. That made me furious, because I said, look, Frankie, you are the greatest talent that's emerging in England. At the time, Hong Kong was a place where all retiring jockeys would go to just make a bit of money before they had to give up. And he was insistent, and I said, well, if you go, it's against my wishes, and I'm very, very cross with you.
And as leading racing journalist Marcus Townend explains, fate would intervene.
Got a police warning for being caught in possession of cocaine on a night out. You know, he was a young man, a man flashing lights of London, the bright lights of London, and he was living sort of a fast lifestyle, shall we say, in those periods. But yeah, you know, ironically, what was a bad episode for Frankie probably worked out very well for British racing.
He was planning to go to Hong Kong, and then he got a positive test for a banned substance, and then that didn't happen, which I think actually was a bit of a blessing in disguise for him. I think him and my dad have always had a good relationship, but maybe it wasn't helped by that incident. And then I think as he went on in his career, he very much was nurtured by John Gosden.
The story is that he turned up at John Gosden's door with very early in January or whatever, with his head shaved, looking a little bit like a convict, not like the normal Frankie we know, and said, I'm here, I want to work. And they got together. I think he's only won his first championships and under John's guidance there. And yeah, it was a fresh start.
We became very, very good friends from the first time round, when the Hong Kong thing slightly blew up in his face and he couldn't go to Hong Kong, and he'd left himself a little bit without a ship here, or a stable to say the least.
Top trainer John Gosden offered Frankie a chance to reboot his career, and he grabbed it with open arms.
People thought he was a little bit of a playboy, not a jockey. And he came back, he started work for me on January the 1st that year, and he was champion jockey 3 years running, riding 230-odd winners a year, and really doing that hard graft. The travelling these jockeys have to do to be a champion rider is exhausting in itself, let alone having to ride 9 races when you wait recently get there, having ridden the afternoon. So he went through all of that process and proved it to everybody.
Dettori's career was back on track, and next we'll hear about the day that catapulted him to sporting superstardom.
28th of September 96 changed my life.
You're listening to Frankie on TalkSport. Welcome back to Frankie, a TalkSport special about one of the most effervescent characters in sport, and a man who at the age of 49 is still the dominant force in his profession. After the sliding doors moment in Hong Kong, Frankie was back racing in Britain and fulfilling his potential. By the mid-90s, he was about to become a household name, achieving the extraordinary at Ascot when he won every race on one of the biggest days of the year.
28th of September 96 changed my life.
Stretching again now as they enter the final 150 yards. Wall Street from Salmon Ladder as they race up towards the line. It's just Wall Street from Salmon Ladder as they run to the line. Wall Street and Frankie Dettori going to win the opener. Wall Street has won it.
Lining up against Frankie on that history-making day was rival jockey Ray Cochrane.
We've been in the sauna together having a little sweat. And when you're in the sauna, the boys always say, you know, you've got some good rides here, Frankie, or you've got some good rides here, Darrell, or whoever was there. Yeah, and I remember him saying, I fancy the one in the third.
But Markham Esteem sprints, and Markham Esteem and Frankie Dettori. He completes a fantastic treble, Frankie Markham Esteem.
So after about the third one, we're sort of looking, thinking, are you going to go? What's going to happen here? We never imagined we'd make it through the card, because everybody was then, after somebody's ridden three winners, well, don't let him ride anymore. Because he's sitting between me and Pat Edery, yeah. And you know, and we're thinking, well, don't let him ride anymore. We've just got to do something here, you know.
But it's going to be 4 out of 4 for Frankie Dettori. As decorated hero goes on to win well by 4 lengths.
Another man whose life changed that day was on-course bookmaker Gary Wiltshire.
I thought, hang on a minute, we've got a chance here. Frankie can ride the 6 race winner, and I'll see all the money coming in for Frankie's mounting a 6. But that had a chance, in my eyes. That had a big, big chance. It was one of the favourites or joint favourites. And I thought myself, no, we ain't going to get involved here. But if this wins, we ain't going to put the foot on the accelerator pedal and we'll have a go at the last race.
Of course, CD putting in a late rally now on the far side, but punched down. It's 6 out of 6 for Frankie as Lock Angel gets there.
A young Ed Chamberlain was also at Ascot.
If I'm honest, I was terrified because I'd graduated from the BHB, as it was then, graduate scheme, and I was at Ladbrokes, of all places, as an odds compiler. And every winner Frankie had, I thought, right, crikey, here goes the liability, here goes the liability. And now by the end of it, I think, here goes my job. Because of the money the firm and the bookmaking industry was hemorrhaging at the time.
Punters piled in on history being made, and Frankie was on board Fujiyama Crest in the 7th with expectations at fever pitch.
No electric boards in them days on the rails. We were shouting the odds out, and the first price I shouted out, I think, was 4 to 1. I think I laid 4 to 1. 4 to 1 the field I shouted out, and one of the reps come down from from Coles. 80,000 a 20. £20,000 in readies. Now, bearing in mind, Rupert, I only went there with £2,500 in my pocket. There was no way in the world. Look, I was the biggest bookie on the rails because I weighed 37 stone, but I weren't the biggest bookie laying bets. And the first bet, £20,000 at 4 to 1. And I thought, hang on a minute, we've got a chance here. I laid him the first bet, £20,000 at 4 to 1. And then the avalanche coming. All the phones. In them days, I don't think there was any mobile phones as well. Another bet come in, £20,000 at 7 to 2, 3.5 to 1. And then all of a sudden, then it was 3 to 1. Then they took 11 to 4. Then they took 5 to 2. By this time, my clerk, he couldn't even breathe, not alone write the bets in the book, because it was all pencil, you know. And I just got carried away, Rupert. It was one of, but the atmosphere there that day, Frankie, it was on fire.
Can Frankie do it? 7 out of 7 or not? He's on the inside. He's just the leader.
It wasn't going to win. It couldn't win.
I always remember going out for the last race. I was at the back, but he sat off on the outside of the field and just went, just dropped his hand on his neck. I thought, he's going too fast. He's going too fast here. This is never going to get home. And you know, we were going very quick in a 2 mile handicap, and he had 10 stone. We thought, never get home, turn down the back, and I'm out. He's never going to get home.
It's Fujiyama Crest, Frankie Dettori, 2 lengths in front as they straighten up for the judge.
And we went to Swindley Bottom, and there was this noise erupted down at Swindley Bottom. We're talking a mile from home. What's this noise? It's not coming from the. There must be a tank or something going up the road. There's nothing going up. You can see out onto the road, nothing going up there. And then we made the turn up at the mile gate, and this noise got louder.
Fujiyama Crest is a half in front, Northern Fleet on the near side.
And I looked to see where he was, and he's still in front. I thought, hang on a minute, that's the crowd from the stand.
At Ascot, when I used to come into the straight, the man used to ring a bell, if you can remember. And when he rang the bell, I was watching it on the screen. And when he rang the bell, it was about a length and a half, 2 lengths in front, and you could see behind, everything was roaring away. And I thought to myself, it can't happen, can it? It can't.
It's a desperate finish as they run up to the line. Fujiyama Crest finding a bit more, and it's 7 for Frankie. Fujiyama Crest holds on.
I got absolutely carried away with the day. I never ever thought, I can't do that. I was only a little baby bookie. I was winning going into the last race, no word of a lie. I think I was winning about £1,400. I was winning. And on the day, I lost £1.4 million.
It was Mike Dillon who said at the time, don't panic. This is the best thing that could possibly happen for racing. This for racing is huge. Yes, it's costing the industry a lot of money and it costs people their jobs. You look at what happened to Gary Wilshire, poor chap. But for the sport, that was publicity and getting people into the sport that money can't buy, because it was a day that, one of the great sporting days in this country, that, again, front page news, and that made Frankie a household name.
Ed was right. to win these seven races on such a significant day. Without question, this was one of sport's greatest moments. And with that win and subsequent flying dismount from Fujiyama Crest, it was a massive boost to racing and a breakthrough moment for Frankie.
You know, six was the record, and to win seven at Ascot on a Saturday was amazing. And I really didn't realise the impact he made, not just on me and a lot of people, because they suspected that the bookmakers lost 40 million on the day. You know, I even moved the stock market. And I realised when I opened the door on Sunday morning and it was like 10 paparazzi there taking pictures of me with my T-shirts and underpants while I was trying to collect the paper from outside my door, I realised...
This was your Notting Hill moment.
Yeah, my Notting Hill. I thought, oh dear, this is beyond what I thought I did. And, you know, and up to this day now, then it's past over 20 years, that I have people coming up to me saying, oh, I won this many thousands, I'll change your life. And great, amazing, absolutely amazing. I enjoyed the attention, I loved it. And I, on the back of that, I did all the things I wanted to do. You know, I did the Parkinson's, I did the present the question of sport, did the morning TV.
Our resident double act, it's sport's answer to Little and Large, Frankie and Ali.
So one of the most successful jockeys of all time. It's the one, it's the only, Frankie Dettori.
Big Brother House now is under the complete control of my regime.
And welcome to the Think It's All Over with David and Lee, as a champion jockey who made headlines last year by riding seven out of seven winners at Ascot.
He's the celebrity jockey who transcends his sport. Frankie Dettori.
I did all those shows possibly known to man. And if it wasn't for that magnificent seven, I don't think I would have had the chance of doing all that kind of shows. And also, you know, just not just being recognised by my sport, but I was recognised in beyond racing public.
Continued success followed for Frankie, who had cemented his role as the number one jockey for the most powerful team in racing, Godolphin. But in 2000, the Tory and fellow jockey Ray Cochrane were involved in a tragic plane crash that would have a huge impact on both their lives.
Be honest with you, I should have been dead, you know. Twice I was lucky. Obviously, we lost our pilot, Patrick. Tremendous shame because you know, I know him and his family, and you know, it's a tragedy what happened. And you know, first of all, I was lucky then I didn't die on the crash itself. And second of all, I was lucky then I broke my leg and Ray was able to drag me out of the plane and before he exploded. So you know, twice I was blessed.
He couldn't see a way out. I mean, lucky I had that one bit of experience in a plane, but I had my own airplane, and we crashed. And very quickly, my brother-in-law, Andrew, he had read the book and all the things I didn't do. He told me, this is how we get out of here, anything goes wrong. So I knew how to get out. The left-hand door was all battered in. The only way out was through the front, which we couldn't get to the front because it was on fire. And the only way, I just looked left and the luggage compartment door was open. I just looked left. So I just grabbed him and said, Frank, get out here. He couldn't see. I fired him out through the door and I went then to go for the pilot. But he couldn't move. Frankie couldn't move. And he was in the way, you know, the flames would have been hitting him. I've got to get him out of the way, and then go the other side for the pilot. But... then it just all erupted. It's one of those things that life throws at you and you've got to handle it the best you can. Luckily, we handled it the best we could, and still even then, we lost the pilot's life, who was an absolutely lovely fella, which even now haunts me a little bit. We couldn't do more. He couldn't, but I tried to get him out and I couldn't do more. And sometimes you wake up and you think, you're a lovely guy, and someone's 3 foot from you, and there's nothing you can do to help him.
And for that very same reason that now Ray Cochrane, he used to be a fellow jockey, and he's now my agent, because I owe him my life. And he has changed my life tremendously because, like I said, I should have been dead. I was just married with a 6-month-old baby, Leo, who is now 20. And, you know... you know, it really, you know, goes without saying, shook me up. But I wasn't the same Frankie for 2 years. It took me a while. You know, I was probably not depressed, but in a shell, you know, trauma. And yeah, there are 2 years. It really took me 2 years to come back.
Coming up, we'll hear about Dettori's first derby success and how his career once again stalled.
I was out of love the last couple of years and I nearly thought quitting.
You're listening to Frankie on TalkSport.
Ryan Reynolds here from Mint Mobile. With the price of just about everything going up during inflation, we thought we'd bring our prices down. So to help us, we brought in a reverse auctioneer, which is apparently a thing.
Mint Mobile Unlimited Premium Wireless. I bet you get 30, 30, I bet you get 30, I bet you get 20, 20, 20, I bet you get 20, 20, I bet you get 15, 15, 15, 15, just $15 a month, sold.
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
This episode of the TalkSport Daily is brought to you by Enterprise Rent-A-Car. Planning to hire or share a car or van? Enterprise is there every step of the way. Whenever and wherever you need a vehicle and whatever it's for, Enterprise can help. With over 450 locations across the UK, they're just around the corner. Whether you need a weekend rental, a holiday hire, a replacement car, or you're planning a business trip, home or away, Enterprise are there to help. To find out more and book, visit enterprise.co.uk.
Frankie, an exclusive interview with Rupert Bell on Talk Sport.
This is Frankie, a Talk Sport special about racing's greatest showman, Frankie Dettori. In 2007, Dettori once again took centre stage as his quest to win Britain's most prestigious horse race finally came to an end.
Authorised, he says go, Frankie. He races into the lead and careers away. Then Akeline, Soldier of Fortune, Locarno giving chase. But it's all authorised. And Frankie Dettori, at the 15th attempt, lays the rest. His Derby ghost as up to the line, authorised, wins in a canter.
It took me 15 years, you know, and you only get one shot at it. You know, it's like you say to Lewis Hamilton, just say you won every race but the Monaco Grand Prix. You know, that's the pinnacle for a driver or for a footballer winning the World Cup, you know. And for us, the Epsom Derby, you know, especially that I won all the other classics, the Guineases, the Oaks and the Ledger, you know, that was the one eluded me. And it got boring towards the end. I had people jumping on my back a week before the Derby. Why you haven't won it? Why this and why that? And
sorry, Frankie.
And it was tiring, and I was dragging this thing around me, and it was a relief, I'll be honest with you. I didn't really enjoy it because it was a massive favourite prior to the race. Of course, I was nervous, but you know, when I did win, it was a relief.
After more than a decade of success riding for Godolphin, the unrivaled unravelled.
The Italian jockey, Frankie Dettori, one of the most recognisable faces in racing, is to face an inquiry after a positive test for a banned substance at Longchamp in France.
I think I was out of love the last couple of years, and I guess I was like a striker that I was working for the best team, but I was sitting on the bench. More and more I was seeing other jockeys riding my horses and I wasn't competing, and, you know, it's frustrating, and, yeah, it was a big loss because, you know, I rode them nearly 1,000 winners and over 100 group ones. And, you know, when your car goes the same direction every morning to work and all of a sudden you know you're not going there, it's a shock of the system. So to a point then, I think it was 2012, I nearly thought quitting.
Dettori was now centre stage for the wrong reasons. Daily Mail racing correspondent Marcus Townend.
At the time, things were changing at Godolphin. Mahmoud Al-Zarouni, who was subsequently, you know, disgraced for using anabolic steroids in his horses, was brought in to be one of the two Godolphin trainers based in Newmarket. A lot of Frankie's success had been with Sayed bin Sarur, as the main trainer. Al-Zarouni came in, there was a change of mood in the camp. Frankie was no longer the number one, the numero uno at Godolphin, and he began to look a more peripheral figure, and he cut a very disconsolate figure on occasions, and he was no longer guaranteed the best rides. His quality of rides dropped for Godolphin. You know, he's still on good horses invariably, but not every day. And it was no coincidence that his subsequent positive test for cocaine happened, I think, about the day after or the weekend after Enki won the St. Ledger at Doncaster. You know, that would have been Frank. Everybody thought Frankie would ride that, but he didn't.
France Gallo have today announced their finding that Frankie Dettori has committed a breach of their rules relating to prohibited substances. I have spoken to Frankie since the announcement was made, and he has told me that he fully accepts France Gallo's decision. He also accepts that he has let down the sport he loves and all those associated with it, as well as the wider public. But most of all, and this is his greatest regret, he has let down his wife and children.
Longtime friend and agent Ray Cochrane reflects on this low point.
A lot of the time, other rides will be booked on the crest of a wave from other yards. You know, it's all built on success. And when you're not having success, all of a sudden other people don't start wanting you. You know, that's what happens. If someone else is riding a lot of winners, they all go to the number one. That's what happens. But it was tough, very tough for a lot of years. He was very down for a long time. But I knew it could change. I knew it could change with just a couple of real nice winners.
Not for the first time in this story, John Gosden took him under his wing.
Things had come to an end at Godolphin, and he got himself in a, you know, he was very much on listing to starboard, to say the least, and the career looked rather sadly over, and he was somewhat of a shadow of his former self. I had William Buick here, who'd come from being a top apprentice with me. He then was requisitioned for Frankie's old job at Godolphin, which obviously Frankie hadn't been at for a couple of years.
I was in Switzerland skiing, and he rung me up one evening. This was shortly after Christmas, and he said, "Have you heard the news?" I said, "No, Frank, I haven't heard the news. I'm in Switzerland skiing. I haven't looked at the Racing Post. We don't get the paper here." He said, "Well, what's happened?" And I didn't know what he was going to say. I didn't know what was going to happen next. He said that William Buick and James Doyle have gone to ride for Godolphin. And the next word that came out of my mouth was, "Have you rung John?" He said, "No, I haven't." And I'm start giving him loads of abuse for not ringing John. I'm saying, "You lazy!" I'm calling him everything. And I mean, I'm giving him some serious abuse. "Why haven't you rung John? You lazy Italian." I'm giving him some serious abuse. And he said, "Will you listen for a minute?" I said, "What?" He said, "I didn't need to." I said, "Why?" He said, "He rang me." I said, "I don't believe you. John Gosden rung you and asked you the job." He said, "Yeah." I said, we're mates.
Was it the easiest call you made? There was no hesitation on your part?
No, none whatsoever. But then Rachel, my wife, I'd just been walking 5 paces behind her as the mayor of Newmarket that she is at the Remembrance Sunday service. And we got back home and I just discussing it with her, and she said, "We should call Frankie." And I said, "You're right." So it was her first idea before it was mine, so I'm not going to claim for that. But it was a logical thing to do. He was a great jockey. You couldn't see the twilight of a career end like that. And, of course, it's been like an ascendancy, you know, the phoenix from the ashes.
He's a genius as a trainer, he's a wonderful man. And, you know, I basically, when I first started for him, I worked for him in the 90s, but then I had a 20-year gap. And then when I first came back, the very first horse he put me on was Golden Horn, the horse that I won the Epsom Derby.
And it was on Golden Horn in 2015 that Frankie would produce a riding masterclass in the Arc at Longchamp.
Arc de Triomphe start holding them, and away they go. They begin their 2,400-metre trip. Dalmia and Golden Horn are the first two to bounce out of the gates. New Bay and Shaha are up there as well. Trev settles about six or seven.
just jumps at me all the time, was the best race he ever rode in his life. And he told me he would ride that race on the Friday before the race. And that was Golden Horn, I think, when he won the arc on him. He rings me Friday morning, he says, that draw's all right, you know. I said, why is that? And my ears pricked up, what's going on here? It's a good draw. He said, look, he said, sometimes he can be a little slowly away. He doesn't need a race with company. He said, if I got left in behind in the pack, down on the fence, he said, I'd be stuck there, he said. I could do nothing. But on the outside, he said, if he misses a beat half a length of start, it's not a problem.
We stood in the stall and looked down the track from that mile and a half start at Longchamp. And I looked at him and I knew what he was going to do. I could just see it in his eyes. He said, John, I'm going to stay straight. Because if I try and want to get in, they're not going to let me in. They'll stack me. And I'm just going to stay out there. And then at the right moment, I'm going to slot. Well, not only did he stay out there, and everyone thought something had happened, that his bridle, the bit had broken, he'd lost control. He was heading for the bicycle track on the outside. But what he cleverly did is when he came across just before the Petit Bois, he managed to put himself carefully behind Trev's pacemaker.
They'll let me do that. He's like, so who I am? They'll want to follow me. And Trev, remember, I'm thinking, Trev's in a race here.
And used the pacemaker to all good effect. And then when he came into the straight and he waited for the 400, which was the right place to wait, and let loose, he said, I was going so fast. Normally the French come like arrows at your back. He said, but the speed I went the last two furlongs, no arrow was going to get to me.
With 300 metres to go, Golden Horn in front, and it's Golden Horn and Frankie Dettori from Flintshire in second place. Trevor's on the outside in third, trying to close. Golden Horn, though, is answering every call from Frankie, and it's Golden Horn who's going to win the arc.
It was a ride that impressed the racing fraternity, including 20 times champion jump jockey AP McCoy.
You know, he was always making sure that his horse had was in a position where it had a free run to go and win a race, you know, and that's what makes him better than everyone else.
It was very unconventional, but an absolute ride of genius, and to that extent, it would stand out.
Is there somebody written it in his script exactly the way he told me on the Friday? People were ringing me after the race, saying, Ray, that's the best race we've ever seen any jockey ride.
Just thinking outside the box, I went alone for the first part of the race, and everybody thought it was crazy. Slotted in and you know, he was a good horse in his own right, but we kind of, you know, I probably made the difference that day, and it's something, you know, that I'm, when he comes off, I'm very proud of it, but it could have gone terribly wrong.
I think he really savoured that, and I think all of these lovely horses and great wins we've had in the last 3 or 4 years have meant an awful lot to him, whereas before I think it was all click the fingers, it just happens because I am who I am and I'm in a position I'm in. And I suppose something to do with years and experience, you do appreciate things more rather than think it's just your not natural, God-given right.
Coming up, we look back at Frankie's most successful season in the saddle and find out what's next. This is Talk Sport.
The gap has opened, but can Frankie Dettori get him in front? Well, he's battling with Master of Reality and DXB. Cross Counter is picking up too with a follow-on to go. Stradivarius is still out in front. Gamely holding on. DXB coming back. So's Master of Reality. Stradivarius, he's run him into the ground. It's 4 out of 4. Dettori on fire!
He was. That was the Ascot Gold Cup, one of Frankie's 19 Group 1 wins, the fourth win out of four at the Royal Meeting, creating a frisson of excitement, reminiscent of the Magnificent Seven we heard about earlier. ITV presenter Ed Chamberlain.
He'd done it before, so people knew what was going on, and you've got the bookmakers much more aware now, so immediately you're hearing stories of the damage that's being done. Plus, you've got social media, which spreads word and gossip very quickly, and you can tell that from the ITV viewing figures, because through the day it went up and up and up, and our top viewing figure wasn't for Stradivarius in the Gold Cup, it was for Turgenev in the Britannia that followed, because word had spread that Frankie's up to something special on Twitter and all these kind of things, where people were clearly racing to televisions and radios to find out exactly what was going on. It whipped people into much more of a fervour this time around than it did when he actually did go through the card in 96. his resurgence has been one of the great sporting stories of recent times. It's just been brilliant. How's he done that? John Gosden's clearly played a huge part, and I think Frankie would play huge testament to the backing he's had from John Gosden. But he's also had brilliant horses to ride. And one obviously stands out in Enable, and his brilliant resurgence. Enable has been a massive factor and put him back on that big stage on which he thrives. And you look back at the Arcs, the King George's, and that's Frankie time.
To have a two damn hot in the stable, a Stradivarius, a Enable, a Coronet, and Starcatcher, Annapurna in the same year, I mean, he's absolutely mad. And so I really have to thank all of them horses, probably other horses than I'd ever mentioned, to be part of this amazing year. And, you know, Enable played a big part.
Crystal Ocean will not give in on the far side. They go head to head, toe to toe. She's just in front of Enable, racing up towards the line, and she'll win a second King George. What a race! That was a horse race!
While Golden Horn was the ride of his career, that victory on Enable will go down as one of the great races of all time. However, at the end of 2019, the dream of three successive Arc wins for Frankie and Enable, well, it just wasn't to be.
And it's Enable in front. She leads. Voltgeist in second place is closing down the centre. Voltgeist in the red jacket is getting up. He's won. Pierre Chalbudeau was one of Voltgeist. Beats Enable.
We came into the Arc, tremendous expectation. You know, we have opened the world's eyes. We're trying to do something what in 98 years of the Arc de Triomphe has not been done before. We were their favourite, and I'd never seen the place Longchamp erupted like he did on Sunday. And of course, I was such a good beat, but circumstances of the 2 days of rain stopped us from doing so. So I was, of course, I was low. You know, I was, you know, it took me all week to get over it. I was more sad for the horse than, you know, obviously, when you do my job, it's more time you lose than you win, so you get used to losing. But, you know, I feel sorry for that we didn't do it.
But the good news is the Enable story is set to roll on, as is Frankie's, who at the age of 49 is still as single-minded as ever.
I go ants in my pants. I don't really see still a lot. Even when I'm on holiday, I left to go for walks and do something. And I can sit in the sand lounge maybe for an hour, but I'm up and doing things. And I've been doing this for over 30 years. I think my family have adopted around me, you know, even so that, you know, I take my kids skiing or places. So we try to do things together, but they're not kids anymore now. Now they've got their own lives, their own school friends, their own parties. So we are close, but we all do our own thing.
Clearly, the commitment is still there. Ed Chamberlain, A.P. McCoy and first former weighing room colleague Jason Weaver explain what keeps Frankie ahead of the field.
You could not have a better pedigree for a human being to be a wonderful champion rider. The best that we've ever seen from a physical perspective, from a balanced perspective, from a mental perspective. He is a little bit crazy. He can be a little bit wild.
No, there is a bit of madness in Frankie, but I think in every genius that competes at a level of sport, there's a switch in them all, you know, whether it's Mike Tyson or Tiger Woods or Zinedine Zidane, you know, all these great, you know, even a George Best, there's something inside them all that makes them different.
He loves it. Sir Anthony McCoy said something brilliant at Royal Ascot the day after he rode those winners and we thought he might go through the card. He said that Frankie Dettori genuinely believes in his head that 75,000 people have come to Ascot to watch him. He believes he is the performer on that stage, which is hilarious, really. But it's probably partly true.
We entertainment sport. I'm trying to promote my sport. And it's, you know, look, I'd be lying to say to you, I quite enjoy it, because when you ride a favourite at Royal Ascot and it's 40,000 people shouting your name, I mean, you can't get any better than that. And the prime examples was when I was in Longchamp and they're all shouting my name. Now everybody forgot about my name, but they're all shouting, "Oh, Frankie Dettori." And I thought, wow, it's mental.
He grew up in the weighing room watching Lester Piggott, Bruce Raymond, all the legends of the weighing room, Steve Cawthon. He went to America when the ballpark was Chris McCarron, Gary Stevens. There were just no free rides in those days. And so he's learnt from the very, very best worldwide. That's why you can drop him off the plane in any country at any given time and he can ride the tempo of the race. Be that France, be that America, be that Australia, he can do that.
It's these two, 1-2 down to the finish, Enable and Magical, and they're well clear of the others. Racing royalty, Enable and Frankie Dettori.
Confidence plays a big part and understanding of horses. When I take a horse into the starting gates, he doesn't know if he's going 1 mile, 10 miles or 100 miles. He doesn't know. So it's up to me to become one with the horse. So he respects my commands. When I say, you know, we must go quicker. When I say to slow down, it slows down because, you know, he's got to trust you. And I think confidence plays a big part. And then I think the rest comes natural to me.
So what else? Trainer John Gosden is aware that Frankie has to be managed to get the best out of him.
He works out hard in the gym rather than pounding the motorways and to go from track to track. A lot of his fitness comes from, you know, being fit from the gym, but also riding horses in the mornings. Not a lot, you know, 2 or 3 mornings a week, but by spacing it at his age and not trying to attend every meeting, going to the better meetings. And there's no doubt that by reserving those energies, he is riding probably like a 28-year-old.
I do wake up and there aches and pains a little bit, but my mind is good. I work for an amazing trainer. He kind of looks after me. He doesn't make me ride, basically, during the week. He keeps me for the weekends, for the big races.
Journalist Marcus Townend knows that Frankie's continued involvement at the top level is crucial.
19 Group 1 winners this season, the best he's ever had. He only had 53 Group 1 rides. You know, that's touching 36%. You know, the elite level to have that sort of strike rate is phenomenal. He is one of the few figures within the sport who the man on the street or the non-racing sort of specialist or audience has heard of. You know, he's presented Top of the Pops. He was a captain on Question of Sports. You know, there's a bit of showbiz about Frankie, and all those people who go to say Royal Ascot their one day of the year or some of the big meetings, you know, they all pretty back Frankie Dettori.
And bookmaker Gary Wiltshire, who, as we said earlier, lost a fortune as a result of Frankie's magnificent seven, knows his true value to the sport.
People love Frankie Dettori. I go racing now, they don't look at the form of horses. They come up and they say, can I have £2 and £5 on Frankie? And that is what racing is all about, Frankie Dettori. And, you know, I love the man. I know anybody with a right mind, like what happened to me, would say, oh, I loathe him. But I love him. I love Frankie. What he's done to the sport is just unbelievable. And my youngest son, he's had a baby last year, little boy born, and you know what he's called it, the name, don't you? Frankie. He said, you'll never forget him, will you, Dad? And look, we love Frankie. Without Frankie Dettori, Rupert, there'd be no racing.
ITV racing presenters Ed Chamberlain and Francesca Cumani.
He is the one person on the flat, most certainly, that resonates beyond racing. He's the man, as we saw at Royal Ascot, when he rode those winners on the Thursday, who gets the sport on the front and the back pages of newspapers. And that makes him invaluable to the sport. I would say he and Her Majesty the Queen are the two most important people in our sport and the two people who will miss most when we don't have them.
There's only ever going to be one Frankie Dettori. The sport will miss him hugely. The sport doesn't know how lucky it's been to have Frankie Dettori. You stop someone in the street and you say, name someone in racing, Frankie Dettori. And they don't really get much beyond that, do they? Because he is this larger-than-life character. Not only is he a brilliant jockey, but he's such a showman, he's such a personality. And how many elite athletes can be there when they're approaching their 50s?
On days like these, when skies are blue and fields are green.
Will you know when to say enough's enough? What will happen to you to say, I can go out with my head held high?
I think when, you know, the moment it's impossible for me to stop because I've got, I'm riding the best stable, the best horses, and I'm loving it. Two things, the body's going to give up first, or you're going to lose your nerve, or you run out of good horses to ride. So one of the three above, what I just mentioned, will decide when I will stop. At the moment, none of the above, and I'm feeling quite good.
The chances are he'll probably be riding till he's 70. Now, in truth, I think if he gets through 50, it's how he feels every year. And he always says to me, John, as a jockey, as an athlete, I'm one injury away from retirement. And there's not a footballer or a jumps jockey who doesn't understand the meaning of that. So, let's play it for as long as we can. He doesn't tax himself by trying to ride too many horses in the season. In fact, everybody's quite annoyed how few he does have to ride.
Recently retired champion jump jockey AP McCoy says Frankie should keep on riding.
He's riding the best horses that he's ever ridden in his life. Not that he'd probably have to do a job like most people would have to do whenever he retires, but there is the possibility that he'd have to do a little bit of work. End up doing a bit of TV or a bit of stuff that you would think you would never have done before. But you can't stay at home in your house all your life, no matter what you've got. You have to get out and get about. And if I was Frankie, I'd be riding until some fella told me to get down off the horse. It's on days
like these. I actually, when I left Italy, of course I wanted to be a jockey, but never in my wildest dreams I thought I was going to be what I am now. I was happy to be a middle-of-the-road jockey and ride my 50 winners and making a living out of it, but everything just snowed out of my control and I got better and better, and then I got addicted to winning, and I was winning big races, and here I am. But I didn't start with I didn't have... of course I had ambitions, but I never thought that I would reach these heights.
Any one last ambition in the sport? Or have you cracked it?
Well, of course, obviously. Funny enough, I never won the July Cup when I live in Newmarket. I love to win the Melbourne Cup because Catherine's family's from down under. So there is always ambitions. I love to win the third Derby. I love to win another Arc. Of course, in my sport, there's always ambitions. And until I've got those, I'll keep going.
The man who has achieved almost everything in the sport. That's Frankie.
I can sit on my rocking chair one day and I say that I've conquered my own sport. And I won every classic. I managed to win 7 in a day, and never mind all the other big races that I won. But, it's a self-satisfaction of what I achieved in my sport. Amazing. And I still got the love for it, and that's why I'm keeping going.
The TalkSport Daily Podcast is proud to be in partnership with Enterprise Rent-A-Car. Whatever your mission, home or away, don't delay. Enterprise has the vehicle for the job. Rent from the best lineup in the UK. With over 450 branches, Enterprise has what your business needs. From compact three-door cars to spacious SUVs and people carriers to vans, they offer a large range of reliable vehicles perfect for the job. To find out more and book, visit enterprise.co.uk.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.